Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 282. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors and specifically GymAware for bringing this to you for free. Only partner with companies that I believe in, both the product and the people. And GymAware is just a fantastic company with a fantastic product. So if you're in the market, reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by a legend, Jeff Hurd. He's the strength coach. He's been out in the league for many, many years. Been too many places to name in an intro, but just been a mentor from afar and a guy that's been doing it the right way for a long time. And super excited to have you on the show, Coach.
Hey, I appreciate it. It truly is. I've been watching these podcast for a number of years, and I'm really happy to be a part of it.
Nah, appreciate that. Well, Coach, you've been, Vikings, Cowboys, Chargers, Chiefs, Jaguars, a couple different stints with, different colleges, Tulsa, Western Michigan, Clemson, Delta State, even with the Special Forces and the USOC for a period of time. Which one of those stops best defines you? Which one was the one that you really kind of came into your own?
I think it was the whole process of being at the start of a franchise with the Jaguars and seeing that whole process unfold. And I was fortunate to work with Jerry Palmieri, another legend to me anyway. I learned a lot being there and watching the process of, how to gel all kinds of different personalities, especially that first year. I mean, we had street free agents, we had big time draft picks, we had, expansion draft players, and we had to mold them all together into a championship caliber team. And I think that's probably the part of my career that kind of formed me for everything else that came ahead. Learned a lot from Coach Coughlin as far as discipline and things like that. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, I think that's been you talk about kind of ramping up really, really quick. I mean, they came in and having to compete right away and piece all the things together. I can only imagine. Go ahead.
There was like two types of competition. One was the league itself as far as competing right out the gate. And two, there was the brother, Carolina Panthers, at the same time. So it was like a race with not just Carolina, but also competing in the league to see who could be the best expansion team first.
That's pretty – yeah, no, I didn't even think about that, but that makes sense. Well, you don't have a 30-year career in at the highest level without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you've learned from it?
Well, I would have to say I think the biggest mistake I made out the gate was – and it didn't take me very long to learn it and correct it. But I think you have to coach the person first, and then coach the athlete. And I think once I grasped that, and I think once you players realize that you really care about them – you can be as demanding as you want after that. I don't think you can flip that and be an asshole or excuse my French or just my way or the highway out the gate. I think you have to get them to trust that you really care about them improving, helping them be better at what they do, how their families are doing, how they are as a person, and coach them as a man, and then coach them as an athlete. And I think that you get a much better response from the athlete that way.
How much do you think that changes? One of the questions I'm going to talk about here in a little bit is the difference between college and pro, but How much do you think that changes what you just said when you're dealing with the collegiate athlete?
Well, I think from the outside looking in, or a lot of people would think that there's a huge difference. I don't think there is. I think it would, whatever level you're coaching at, I think it's vital that you coach that person first, you know, as who they are, where they're from, what they're about. And then you can ask them to do just about whatever kind of workload you want, especially if it's sound. That, first of all, has to be correct. But they'll work their tails off for you if they feel that you really care about them. And I don't care what age they are, what level they're at. I think that's a foundation for any kind of successful sports performance program.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. And, you know, I often talk about it, you know, as I've bounced between the NFL and college through my career, you know, I often get asked, what's the biggest difference, you know? And what I typically say is that, you know, you have a much better opportunity to make a lasting impact on the collegiate athlete because you're involved with them in the maturation process and
I agree.
Within the NFL, you still have the opportunity to make an impact. That doesn't – you're not lost on it, but it is a little bit more transactional, you know, in terms of people coming and going all the time. But you're dealing with a more informed consumer. You're dealing with athletes that kind of have an understanding of what they like and what they don't like. And you have to kind of, you know, work within that. You're forced to work within that because, I mean, ultimately it's you or them. And a lot of times they're going to make a little bit more money than you are.
A little bit? Yeah, a lot more.
So what would you say is the biggest difference between college and the NFL?
Well, I think you've already nailed that on the head. There's more of a, you know, business side to it. And I'm sure it's becoming that way a little more in college.
Sure.
Just by the amount of money that's involved, which seems to drive a lot of different things. But I think it's more of a business. The business side of it, I think, is the biggest difference with the NFL. I mean, you know, if they don't perform, you know, they really don't. The leash is pretty short. If you don't perform, you're not going to be there. And it can be that you don't fit into a certain scheme or you don't. You know, you don't mesh with management or the position coach or whatever. You know, you have some off-field issues. I mean, there's a lot of things involved in whether it could be a numbers game. You could actually be good enough, but, you know, you got two guys ahead of you that they're not going anywhere. So you got to audition every week hoping that maybe you could be on somebody else's roster. You know, and then if there's a coaching change, you know, I've been blessed to have had some fairly long stints, you know, 7 years and 9 years with different teams. And I think that's when you get to really get see the side of it, of people coming and going. And it's hard. It really is. And I think if you can be that steady influence that stay the course no matter what's going on around you, I think the athletes really appreciate that.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point, you know, and one that, I mean, it's easy to kind of talk about with college athletes, the stress of, you know, girlfriends and boyfriends and academics and all those types of things. But when this is your job and it's how you put money on your table and it's not always about, you know, just talent, there's a tremendous amount of stress that comes with that as well that you have to account for as a strength coach.
No question. I mean, you have to look at it like this is my job now. I mean, I have to lift, I have to run, I have to take care of my body, and I have to learn my playbook, which is ungodly thick. And I can't miss an assignment. You know, I can't miss a mental rep. I can't make mistakes. I mean, there's a lot of pressure involved. And it's the guys that can handle that stay up with that, that seem to be – athletes, you know, in the league that stay a long time. I mean, you have to really be on top of the mental part of the game. You just can't out-talent somebody at the next level. And there is a lot of stress and pressure involved in that. It's the guys that can handle that. And, you know, they've got families now. They have to take care of they're trying to feed them. They're trying to take care of their parents. There's a lot of things that get involved in it that add to it.
when you had that rookie that walked into your office for the first time, I mean, they've been told by everybody how great they are. They've had an unbelievable college, experience. They're drafted high, and they have, like I said, they're that informed consumer. They've had success and they've maybe been drafted at the highest level already. What's your conversation like with that young player of the value that you're going to be able to provide them throughout their career?
Well, the first thing I tell them is that you have to be a pro. You are a pro. You have to remain a pro. And that means you're on time for everything. You stay up on your playbook. You're not late for anything. And you have to win each part of your day. And I tell them, I said, you can't give them a reason. You cannot give them a reason upstairs. You cannot be a bad employee. This is real now. It's not. You can't be a high maintenance guy. They don't have time for that. You have to be a good teammate. You have to be good in the locker room. I mean, this is about everybody having success, whether it's the coaches, management. I mean, everybody, your teammates especially, are relying on you to do your job. And that's basically what I tell them out the gate. I said, it's still a game, and Sunday is the fun day. Sunday's the day you get to go out and display all this discipline, all this hard work, all this being on time, all this knowing your assignments, all this taking care of your body. Now you get to go show it in front of the whole world on Sunday. But it's leading up to that that's important. And it's not just about you. It's about the whole team, the whole organization, and you knowing your specific job.
Absolutely. I think that's such an important conversation to have, and I think it's one that often, especially young strength coaches, miss, where you have to have that initial meeting and set the standard early and get it communicated completely and effectively. So you can draw back on that and point back to that conversation to say why it is, that you've had that conversation and that they should be handle themselves a certain way. But without that, I think there's too much ambiguity, and I think there's too much opportunity for misinterpretation or miscommunication to exist.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. I think we as strength coaches, we have an opportunity to be more than just about the sets and reps.
Right.
And, and I tell guys that. I tell the young guys that. I said, look, I've seen a whole bunch, and I can be a big help to you as far as if you have questions about things. And I'm going to tell you straight up how it really is. And I'm going to be there if you don't understand it. I'm going to help you as much as I can. But it always comes back to you as far as you taking the advice. And it's on you to make sure that you get done what you're supposed to get done. Absolutely. But I'm always there as a resource. I'm there as support. I'm there to help you. And anything I ask you to do, it's not about me. My only motivation is if you look good, I'm going to look good. And if you perform well, I'm going to look good. And the team is.
No doubt. Well, you've been, like we talked about at the beginning, I mean, you've been in this for 30 years now or close to that. What are the things that you think are great about the profession right now? And what are the things that you wish you cringe a little bit?
Well, I don't know everything, and I never will. And I continue, even at my age, I'm always going on. I don't have a favorite website or, but I try to go to as many as I can. And it's funny, the things that make me cringe is the things that think they're going to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
And they're really not. I'm all about science, but I think it needs to be good science. And sometimes I cringe about some of this stuff that I think is out to disprove what has stood the test of time. And I think science should only improve the things that have stood the test of time, not kick them to the curb, not get rid of them, but accentuate them and make them better. But, the foundation of how to get strong, how to get fast, how to become more pliable. You know, all those things that they've been around and they've stood the test of time. And I think we're getting away from it too much. And it makes me cringe a little bit. We're all about, you know, making people anatomically perfectly correct. And maybe the reason the guy's that good is because he does have that slight flaw. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
But if for whatever reason he's able to turn that corner, and now if we change everything on him, maybe he's not going to be as good an athlete at that position. So I think there's a fine line there. Sometimes I cringe when I see these guys saying, I'm going to make people feel better, perform better. I. And you know what? I think sometimes they need to take a step back and say, how did this guy get to where he's at, and how can I improve that instead of just overall change wholesale?
Yeah, I think that's a common mistake, you know, and what you hit it right there on the head as well, where you're talking about, I mean, just saying the word I mean, it's not about you as a coach. It never should be. But, you know, taking credit or feeling like, you know, strength and conditioning's a much bigger piece of the pie than maybe it really is a mistake made by a lot of young coaches. I mean, what do you think are some of the mistakes that you're seeing by this next generation of strength coach?
Well, I think that I think there's a little bit of there's a facade out there sometimes, I think, of, you know, who – I'm trying to think of the right word. Who can be the most demonstrative, and that makes you a good strength coach? I mean, who can act like a strength coach as far as how loud I can be, how much attention I can attract to myself? And that kind of makes my skin crawl a little bit as far as I think – they got to be careful, because as strength coaches, I think sometimes we get way more credit than we deserve, and we also get way more blame than we deserve. So the more attention you attract yourself, the more blame that you're going to have placed on yourself too. I think we, as important as we are, I think we need to let the wins and losses and the performance of the players speak for how good we are.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with that.
And I think you got to get guys hyped up. I mean, I'm all for that. But I also think you need to make sure that it's not a tent revival compared to pastoring the church, if that makes any sense.
It does completely. Yeah, it's definitely – I mean, it's an emotional game.
Oh, it is.
And you got to elevate emotions. And a coach, there's no better person at doing that sometimes than a coach or – but the moment it takes away from the player is the point where it crosses the line to me.
Well said. Well said. I mean, sometimes I think young strength coaches forget that the reason there's a strength coach is because there's a football team. There's not a football team because there's a strength program or a strength coach.
Agreed. You know, the other side of this business is it's not an easy thing to stay in it for 25 years, 30 years, between the periods of transition. I mean, you've gone, you know, you've been head strength coach. You've had to go backwards. You've gone back to being a head strength coach. You've gone with the ebb and flow of this profession. How can these coaches best prepare themselves for the moments of transition so they can stay in the field? And how can they best prepare themselves for the moment that they hang up that whistle and they retire?
I think you should try to, first of all, I think you stay as humble as possible. I really do. Be as hardworking and as supportive of your head coach and your team for as long as you possibly can. And just be a team guy. And sometimes you have to look at what really is your passion. What level is your passion at, as far as when I say level, college level, NFL. And then there's the transition from, like you said, when you hang your whistle up, I'm not going to lie, I still miss it. And if the right guy were to call me, I would go back.
Right.
But it would have to be the right situation. Because I'm – I look back and I wouldn't trade anything I've done. The experience has been great. I've been blessed to, you know, stayed in it for as long as I have. And even today, I mean, I have a business that I've started, and I'm not trying to build an empire, but I still want to help people become the best they can be. And whether that's on an individual basis, whether it's a team, you know, and I don't think you ever really hang it up. I think once you're a coach forever.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's I would echo that too, even where I'm at in my career. You know, I mean, coaching's in, if you're a coach, if you're a true coach, it's in your DNA, and it's not going anywhere, you know. But you got to find, you know, like I said, with this field being so volatile, you have to find ways to be able to weather the ups and downs of that, you know. And I think that that's where, you know, making sure you're putting money away, making sure you're smart with your finances, you know, knowing that that's a possibility. I mean, that was something for me, is even knowing that you could be fired was something that was new to me at one point in my career. What advice, I mean, is there anything like that? You know, I mean, obviously putting money away and maxing out your 401k or whatever you can do. Is there anything any advice like that that you would recommend to young coaches to do to prepare for life after coaching or those periods?
Yeah, and I think one thing, first of all, I like the fact that guys are getting paid now. They really are, and I think it's awesome. Some of the salaries, I think, are way overdue for the amount of time and effort. And in comparison, you know, we have our hands on every single player.
Great.
For the whole year. And I think the salaries are starting to catch up to that. And I think it's awesome for these young guys. What I think they need to make sure they do is they don't let themselves become stale either. Don't ever give up on your principles and what you truly believe in. But you do have to reinvent yourself periodically. So it's not just mundane as far as what your beliefs are. So you have to keep that in mind. And I think, like, maxing out your 401k or your – and then make sure if you're at the college level, put that money into the TIA CREF, just to make sure that when that time does come, because it will sooner or later,
right,
you're not just like, oh, gosh, what do I do now? I don't have any money. You know, how am I going to support my family? And I think you also have to, and I did not do this soon enough, I think you have to make sure that you have a backup plan. Always have a backup plan. What would I do if I could not do this? What right. form of strength conditioning would I do? And I think that's important, because the first time it happened to me, I was like, oh, my, what do I do? What else do I know? Well, I didn't want to not do what I love to do. So it forced me to, you know, I spent time with the at the Olympic Center in Chula Vista. I spent time working at a place that prepared athletes for the combine. You know, I did a whole bunch of different things that were outside of my comfort zone that I'd never done before. But you know what? It showed me that I could be good at that too if I had to, and that I could still feed my family. So I don't think you should just put yourself in, pigeonhole yourself into, okay, I'm going to be a college strength coach forever. I think you should work as though you were going to be, and that's usually how you stay in it for a long time, continually improve yourself. But I think you need to have a backup plan at all times and make sure that you're taking advantage of the financial things that are offered to you as far as your TIA CREF and your 401k plan.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think when people hear that, especially when you're young and you're full of kind of piss and vinegar, you know, there is a certain level of being in this field early in your career, saying that there is no backup plan and jumping both feet in and saying, you know, let's go. But once you've been in it for a while, then, you know, that backup plan doesn't mean that you're selling out or that you're giving up or that it simply is that you are. What I think and what I suggest people do is always develop other skill sets, you know. And so if your backup plan was to go be an AD, well, then you better be sitting on a couple of hiring committees and things like that while you're at this school. Or if your backup plan is to open up a gym or a performance facility, then you better understand the sales process or the marketing process, And those are going to make you, those skills are going to make you a better strength coach. So it's a double win in my
opinion. No question. The more you can expand yourself, I think, without compromising what your philosophy is, what you believe in, I think it's important that you do those things. And networking is critical.
Right.
And that way you also find out sincere people and unsincere people. I mean,
yeah.
I cannot be on here without publicly, you know, thanking a fellow strength coach, Evan Marcus. I mean, I was
great
2 years away from meeting the retirement qualifications, and we all got let go with the Chargers, and I'm sitting out there, and Evan got the job with the Vikings, and he called me up and said, hey, would you be my assistant? He knew that I had no ulterior motives. If I came on board as his assistant, because we knew each other, he knew I was only going to try to be the best assistant I can be.
Right.
And you know what? It got me to rule of 58, and thank goodness I'll be indebted to Evan forever.
Yeah, fantastic person as well. Coach, you know, now it looks – the landscape of strength and conditioning looks a lot different than it did 25 years ago, but still a lot of the principles are the same. But for that young coach that's listening to this that wants to have the career that you've had, to be at the highest level of football for that long, what advice would you have for that person trying to get the job in the NFL, you know, that's just now graduating college?
Well, a lot of things have changed, but it's also – change has caused – people to look back and reflect on what still works and what has stood the test of time. And I think as a young strength coach, you need to really understand the game itself and where it's at. I think you need to still be willing to pay your dues as far as like you had. You went and worked for various NFL teams. I started out as an intern. I started out volunteering training camps.
Yep.
When I was a head strength coach at Western Michigan University for three hots and a cot. And then I was an intern, you know, walked away from a head coaching job at Western Michigan to go be an intern for $900 a month, no benefits. And threw bags at the airport at night just to, you know, feed my family. And you know what? It paid off. But I think sometimes people are always looking for the shortcut. If you're going to do it, you need to man up and do whatever it takes and do it the right way, not try to backbite or cut somebody's throat or undermine them. You need to do it the right way and work and not be afraid to volunteer and learn, especially if it's for somebody who's been involved in it for a long time. Make them look the best they can be, and in turn, it's going to help you in the long run. I've seen guys take shortcuts and, you know, blow somebody up from behind and get their job. And you know what? It seems like it always comes back to haunt them. And their longevity is not very good.
Never works out. I agree with you. I think that's an important point that you made there where, you know, volunteering at this point, you know, there's so much out there about people, you know, talking about the value of volunteering and how it's, cheap or no cost labor and all the potential pitfalls that come with that. But the reality is it shows dedication, it shows commitment, it shows, and it is extremely valuable because you do get an opportunity to learn, from the greats. You get to learn the logistics of that level. You get to learn the schedule, all those types of things, you know, and I think it's an important part of this process as well. I volunteered, I was an intern for the Kansas City Royals, and I was an intern for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I mean, it's still some of the most valuable learning experience that I've had in my entire career.
You know, the old saying is you really don't know until you sit in that chair.
Exactly.
You know, I remember, and I'll tell young guys this, when you are an assistant or you are volunteering or you are an intern, there's nothing wrong with you making mental notes of, you know what, I don't think I would do it that way when I am the head guy.
Right.
But until that time, you coach what your superior wants as if it's the only way you know. Because I promise you, once you sit in his chair or a head strength coaching chair, there's going to be things come up that you're going to be like, you know what? Now I know why he did it that way. Now I know why this occurred.
Absolutely.
And things you don't read in a book, things you can't learn on the computer. You know, it's a matter of experience. And I think sometimes that gets lost nowadays.
Great.
And people don't want to take the time to learn those things. They just want to be there because I know everything, or I know I have all this knowledge from a book, not from experience.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. You're definitely, if you think you're going to learn from a book, you're in the.
It's important. I'm not saying it's not, but right. There's things that you need to learn from somebody who's made mistakes. It's almost like you learn from your parents. And it seems like the older you get, the smarter they get. And it's the same thing with strength coaches.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, Coach, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I think I've stated it, you know, as far as, you know, coach the man first and the athlete second. I think staying true to what you believe in. And the other thing I'd like to add is make sure you coach what you know, not what you think might work. You know, test that out on yourself, but coach what you know. And I think that's very important. I think stay humble, you know, and stay on point as far as your own work ethic. And I think, you know, be a team player. But the main thing I think is stay true to yourself and what you believe in, and always be the guy that wants to help others get better.
Yeah. What about a book, app, or and website recommendation?
Well, I think, you know, you can't go wrong. They revise it every few years. NSCA's book on, as far as just a baseline of things, the essentials of strength training conditioning from the NSCA, I think that's always a go-to book as far as learning just the basics of strength and conditioning. As far as new stuff out there, I think there's a book that's out now that I think is incredible. And it's called The Method. And it's written by two legends in my mind, Johnny Parker and Al Miller. And it's a phenomenal book. I think it's a must read. I think anything by Dan Johns is an excellent read. And then the new guy out there that I think really has some great things to offer is Cal Dietz. Yeah. As far as bridging the gap between I don't want to say old school, but good school, things that have stood the test of time, and with science, modern technology. He does a great job of meshing those together.
I agree.
So if you're looking for things to improve yourself on, I think those three guys, and then plus the basic essentials from the NSCA, I think is a go-to.
It's awesome.
If you want some entertainment, there's a book coming out. Probably right before Christmas. It's called The Golden Age of Strength and Conditioning.
Yeah.
Chip Sayer got, I think there's 30 of us together, and we all wrote a chapter. We were only allowed, I think it was 2,500 words.
Yeah.
But kind of to tell your story. And there's some people in there, highly intelligent people, old strength coaches, that it will be very entertaining if you get your hands on one of those and read. It's called The Golden Age of Strength Conditioning.
Yeah, it's Johnny Parker was telling me about that. I'm excited for that one.
Well,
I'm looking.
Don't ever miss out an opportunity to visit with somebody that's gone before you. For these young strength coaches, because I think it'll help you take what you know and apply it to real life situations.
No, I agree. Well, Coach, that's, I appreciate you so much. I mean, again, going back to me writing you letters way back in 1996 or seven or whatever that was, to just the way that you've attacked this career, done it the right way, done it with integrity, done it with passion and energy, and awesome just to see, you know, what you're doing now and how you're continuing to be a lifelong learner, even long after, not long after, but after, you know, such a distinguished career in the NFL. So it's inspiring in many, many ways. So thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with everybody.
Well, Ron, it's an honor, and you hit it on the head with integrity. And if that's what people can say about you when you're done, then I think you've done it the right way. And you also have always done it the right way. And that's why I appreciate being on this podcast.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks so much. All right, let me hit the end button here. I don't know why it is not, but this thing is acting up to me for some reason.
Is it just me and you now?
Yeah, it's just me and you. Yeah, we're ending it now. Let me
okay.
Trying to end the meeting. Give me 1 second.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.